As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to the Game Podcast. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and on this festive week, I'm joined by Patty Barkley, Tony Evans, and from the Great Northeast, George Culkin. This week, we'll be taking a look at Newcastle against Manchester City and Villa v Spurs. We'll also be doing some quick hits, Rooney's goal drought, Johan Elmander's tribute to Avi Cohen, and can Mick McCarthy keep Wolves in the Premier League? Also in our debate, we'll be taking a look at all-time greats. Should we really be comparing players from totally different eras? So please strap yourself in and stick with us for the next 35 minutes or so. All right, let's get started with our Premier League review, and I think this week, because we have George Culkin with us, we really need to start at St. James's Park. But before we go there, we haven't had a show since the wonderful rapprochement between Carlos Tevez and Manchester City. Gut reaction is there's more here than meets the eye. Tony, what do you think?
I think those kids were made for each other. I knew they'd stay together. You know, it's there wasn't going to be no ugly divorce there. And you know what? It gave me a warm, fuzzy glow before Christmas. You know, that made my holidays.
I wish you could see Tony's face right now. Patty, is it amazing how these things just sort of sort themselves out?
Yeah, it is. It's a bit like the Ferguson-Rooney one, maybe less messy. But no, I'm really, really glad that Tevez seems to be staying with Manchester City. I think they were made for each other. And playing for Manchester City, he's played the best football I've ever seen him play.
George, I was talking to a former Newcastle player last night from Trinidad, and he made the point to me that obviously he was there with Tino Asprilla, and he just made the point that at the time, you know, Tino possibly a little bit of a volatile mind, but just a little bit, but he said that in the way the Premier League is today, and possibly the way City is today, it's a little bit more welcoming to the volatile minds, maybe because there's more of them, or maybe simply because there's more foreign players. And it's not xenophobic coming from Xhaka, because, of course, he's a foreigner himself in the sense that he has about 7 passports. But do you buy into that?
Well, I mean, you know, City are having to create something on the hop, aren't they? It's not about sort of organic growth. It's about sort of jam-packing everything in straight away and then hoping it kind of works. And I think because of the level they're at, they're having to bring in characters that they wouldn't necessarily be wanting to bring in if they were, you know, Man United or Arsenal or whatever. So they're not going to get the very, 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 very best top 3 players in the world at this stage. So they're sort of going one step beyond that. So I think that volatility comes with that. You see that quite often with clubs that are promoted as well, actually. But, I mean, I have to say that Tevez was absolutely brilliant yesterday, I thought. He was not only scored 2 goals, but was the sort of heartbeat of the City team, led by example, hungry, energetic, determined, and absolutely no sense of questionable commitment. So, for now at least, it seems to be sort of... they seem to have come to a sort of arrangement that's working, but no, he was great yesterday.
George, just staying with you, I watched this game and on the Magic Dish, and I have to say, I thought, you know, Newcastle go 2 goals down, but I thought there really was a tremendous reaction there. I thought the game was exceptional in the second half, and not just entertaining in a car crash sort of way as we sometimes see, but. I thought Newcastle actually played well, maybe slightly monothematic with Carroll, but it was working. When you see this kind of reaction from Newcastle, I mean, what do you put it down? Do you put it down to Pardew? Do you put it down to the environment?
I certainly don't put it down to Pardew. I don't think there's anything sort of different yesterday that Newcastle haven't shown under Chris Hughton, and that includes the frailty. I mean, the two mistakes they made, you know, effectively killed the game within the first 5 minutes. And I think, you know, while City sort of did pretty well after that, they also don't yet have that killer touch that, you know, that they're going to hit teams for 3, 4, 5, 6. So I think they, you know, the two parts of it was that they stepped back a bit and Newcastle had no choice but to go forward. And, you know, Andy Carroll's radar wasn't quite set right yesterday, but in terms of winning the ball in the air, he was absolutely everywhere. And, you know, again, you see what a great player he is. But, you know, there were very familiar themes with Newcastle's season, which includes being a little bit frail at home, which includes making mistakes, but also includes that great spirit and tenacity they've got. But they don't have a huge squad. If your first change is bringing on somebody like Niall Ranger, if you've got Wayne Routledge on the pitch in the first place, you know, I think that shows a little bit of the problems that they still have.
Tony, I have to ask, this has long been a pet peeve of mine, and I'd love to know where you stand. I mean, Andy Gray has taught us all that it's impossible to jump without waving your elbows around and elbowing defenders in the head. I look at Andy Carroll, and I appreciate the guy might be a physical freak of nature, but I'm absolutely shocked by how a guy so big and so heavy jumps so high, stays up there, manages to jump so high without a run-up, without elbowing people in the head. Is Andy Carroll the exception, or is Andy Gray maybe just kind of justifying strikers who like to elbow people in heads?
Well, Andy Gray was the king of the elbows, wasn't he? You know, it's technique, isn't it? You know, and one of the things that you often see these days is really bad heading technique. I mean, it appears they don't teach kids what they taught us. You know, keep your eyes open, head the ball downwards. You know, and then
but he defies gravity because he stays in the air. He hangs in the air like he's some kind of bat.
Yeah, but Gab, you know from watching American sports, you know, you watch from watching basketball players, you know, they practice jumping and they can do this. You know, it's I don't think a lot of forwards in this country actually practice jumping in the sense of getting higher, you know, technically, you know, how to do it, the mechanics of jumping high. And, you know, that's what I'd be doing. I'd be having them doing that.
Just stay with Carroll. One last thing. George, I mean, you've seen a number of Newcastle centre forwards and so on. Am I getting a little bit carried away, and am I a little bit sad that, like, well, I mean, to me, one of the best things he did was there was a cross which was mishit. It was basically hit way over him. He jumps into the air and then he somehow stays back up there, cranes his whole body backwards, still gets to the ball, and he knocked it down, I think, for Nolan or something, who then screwed his shot wide. I don't know if you recall the incident. Am I getting carried away? Are you taking this athleticism from Carroll for granted? And is it athleticism, or is it, as Tony said, also technique?
Well, it's both. I mean, his progress has been absolutely phenomenal. I mean, it's happened so much quicker than I think most people would have thought, including me. I didn't think he was ready last season. I wasn't sure he was going to be ready this season. And it's, you know, I've proven to be completely wrong. Yet again, he's been absolutely superb. And, yeah, you're right. It's not just, he isn't just a sort of monster in the air. He's also worked on his mobility. And, you know, he's good in that respect. He's good at finding space. And he reminds me of Alan Shearer in the sense that he's able to win free kicks in dangerous areas, and also in the way that he defends as well, that he's back for corners, he's the first line of defence there. And he is terrific. And, you know, as long as he continues to stay out the wrong half of the newspapers, that progress will continue.
Better feet than Shearer, George. In fact, I would go that far.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Well,
why don't we have that argument when he scores 27 hat-tricks in a season the way Shearer did?
I'm talking about the footballer. I'm not talking about the statistics. I mean, they'll speak for themselves. I think as a footballer, his technique is astonishing. That I can't actually see anything that he doesn't have. I mean, there was a turn yesterday that was, you could have thought it was Marco van Basten out there.
Well, it's rare, I think, to see an English 6'3" centre forward even think about doing something like that.
If he wasn't a good footballer, if he didn't have good feet, he'd be still pretty good. But it's the lovely touch he's got that makes him something really extraordinary.
Moving on now to Villa and Spurs. We will get to the Defoe sending off, because I know that's an issue with Paddy. But I just want to get a quick whip round the table here. And I just want to know, who's on the Tottenham bandwagon? Who really believes that Tottenham can finish top four again in 50 words or less? Tony.
Well, I sorted it before yesterday. You know, sort of, they didn't see the game out like a top four side would. They lost a bit of composure. It was all a bit frantic towards the end. And they didn't hold the ball. I was expecting them to hold the ball and pass it round.
They were down to 10 men, to be fair.
Yeah, but good sides against a clueless and hopeless Aston Villa generally can do better. Or should do better.
Paddy?
I think the possible top four side, I mean, they might be fighting for that place with Manchester City, so it won't be easy, but I don't see why not. I think Tottenham, I didn't like the goalkeeper yesterday. I thought he was a terrible weakness.
The other thing I didn't like about them, and it was the tendency to want to play football in bad areas. I mean, Hutton, like, you know, sort of 2-0 up, down to 10 men. They're under a bit of pressure. He starts dribbling the ball out.
Scottish Cafu. Yeah. What are you going
to
do?
And, like, he tries to be two men. He's the last man. He tries to be two. Are you insane? You know,
that's part of the reason why they've been so good to watch this season. I mean,
Is that good to watch? It sends me insane. I don't think it's good to watch. I think it's crap football. Like, it's entertaining, but if you want entertaining, go to the circus. I want to see good football, especially from top four teams.
It's a fair point. You know, you've grown up seeing Liverpool win countless games 1-0. I don't know. I think there's a kamikaze element to Tottenham's football, which has been
4-3s. I saw a lot of 4-3s.
Enjoyable in Europe and in the Premier League, but they do try and play the game the right way.
They'll get hurt by the better sides, especially in Europe. The last 16.
But I think it's great that they are near the top four again. I did think at the start of this season that it would stretch them actually being in Europe, but they've just about managed to hold on there, and they've certainly got a chance. They're great to watch.
I personally think they have a ways to go. I think defensively they're really, you know, against a poor Villa side on a poor day, and yes, they were a man down, but I think they're still. They still have a lot of ground to make up. Back to Jermaine Defoe. He was sent off. Again, Atkinson got pilloried for this on television, and people pointing out that there was no intent, which I think we all know really doesn't really matter, and that he was leading with the arm and not leading with the elbow, which is kind of interesting because I thought the elbow is actually part of his arm, but you know, Defoe's always been a bit unusual. Paddy, would you have sent him off?
Look, if you hit somebody in the face, you're off. I don't think there was an argument, and I found it rather odd. I thought the people making excuses for him were just making fools of themselves, to be honest with you. I also thought he was making a fool of himself by either feigning or displaying astonishment at the decision. To me, it was a good decision. I'm not particularly crazy about Atkinson as a referee, but I thought it was a very good spot, a correct decision, and borne out by the replays.
Any dissent?
Get him off. You whack someone in the head. Yeah. What do you expect?
I mean, people say, "Oh, it was only his arm," but if you walk up to someone and hit them with your arm, you're still off, aren't you?
I think Defoe's innocence was genuine in the sense that what that says to me is that there needs to be a bit more education here about, as we were talking earlier, about how to jump and about how dangerous the elbow can be. I mean, it is if you get caught by the tip of an elbow at high velocity, then, you know, it is a life-threatening, you know, injury potentially. So I think there does need to be more education about the dangers of it and how to jump. I don't think Defoe did it. I don't think Defoe did it on purpose for a single minute as I was on the ball. But you know, you are threatening someone's health very seriously with that kind of jump.
Now, it was another incident late in the game, which I don't know how many. I don't know if it was a match of the day or how many people caught this, but. At one point, Villa chases the game. Robert Pires is on. Pires, who is a rather wily player, I think we can say that in a nice way. Nice enough guy, but when he needs to get a little dirty, he knows how to do that. And there was one situation by the sideline where he clearly obstructed. I think he'd fallen over. He was clearly obstructing somebody who was trying to get away. And Harry Redknapp jumps out, jumps off his bench, goes, and clearly and very audibly uses a pretty obvious obscenity.
A go-away word, yeah.
Yes, industrial language, I think, is what some might call it. And he has a face-to-face with Pires. Now, I have no idea if Redknapp apologized for this afterwards or if we saw it. I'm just wondering, should we treat it differently when we have managers who are on the sidelines who go out and confront players like that? Or should we treat managers the way we treat players? In other words, heat of the game, get away with whatever you want.
What are you suggesting? That, you know, we stop people calling each other names?
No, I mean, I'm suggesting that maybe we stop a man in his 60s from getting up off the bench and having a face-to-face stare down with a player and using the F-bomb on him when, you know, that could have led to something ugly, no?
Right, ultimate storm in a teacup. Ultimate storm in a teacup. If we start trying to legislate against people swearing and other people in a game of football, then we've gone too far. Send them off when they cause physical violence. But, you know, a man jumps up, a little bit of handbags on the sideline. Who the hell cares?
Okay, so I guess they took the bit in the game about, and the laws of the game about foul and abusive language. That's out.
Isn't it foul or abusive language?
It's changed now.
Always a bit unrealistic.
Graham Pohl explained it to me. Ah. It's out now. It used to be foul or abusive language. Now it's changed, as he explained to me.
It must be foul and abusive.
Yeah, so basically if a striker shoots on goal and screws his shot wild and he's, you know, uses an obscenity and at himself, that's fine because it's foul and it's abusive. By the same token,
that means that you can call a referee a cheat, but you can't call him an effing cheat.
If you
call someone a cheat, you're only being abusive. You're not being foul.
When I refereed, if someone swore at me, I generally let it go. If they call me a cheat, I'd send them off.
Okay, excuse me, Tony. I know a little bit about your refereeing career. I believe that was in like South Central LA, where you were refereeing people with guns.
A lot of people did remark he is no Alison Rudd.
I was the bringer of justice.
One point here about which I find interesting. And I know that I believe there was a similar case in Newcastle, or at least in the Northeast a few years back. But I read in a Sunday paper, which is also accessible behind this very same paywall, that Stephen Ireland, who makes something like $65,000 a week, he still lives near Manchester.
Yeah.
And he's commuting to Villa's training ground 75 miles each day, and Houllier has asked him to move and he's refused, saying that, well, there's some other players who also live far away and they're not moving. Now, George, I'm no physiotherapist, but wouldn't spending two and a half hours a day, I'm assuming he drives a speed limit, in a car immediately before and after training, wouldn't that be kind of a stupid idea for a guy who actually cares about his future as a footballer?
You know, I don't know that side of it. You wouldn't have thought it can help, but you know, then again, people who live around London probably have similar length of journeys to get across there in rush hour. To me, it's more about, you know, it's more about that commitment to where you are and sort of respect to the football club, respect to the to supporters, and I do think that creates a problem. It might sound a bit daft, but you know, if you're playing for a football club, you should be immersed in that area. You should be immersed in the city that you're playing in, and you should be part of it. And I don't see how Stephen Ireland can be like that if he's so far away, and you know, particularly at a time when his football power seemed to be on the wane so very badly. You would think that he'd want to commit himself to the club that bought him, and you know, show that his heart's in it. And I do think that might create a little bit of tension around the dressing room.
I would have thought it depends entirely on whether it's in the contract. And most footballers are tied by contract in terms of where they can live.
Well, the England manager has to live within 25 miles of Soho Square.
Yeah, and they've moved the goalposts, haven't they, to Wembley? But in every Manchester United player for the last 50 years, ever since Matt Busby took.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, Road Station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Chargers had to live within, I don't know how many miles of the training ground, 4 or 5, you know, I mean, maybe 10, I don't know. It's just the standard contract. Now, it may well have been that the previous manager of Aston Villa was so desperate to sign Stephen Ireland that they took that out of the contract, in which case Stephen Ireland has every right to stick to his contract.
George, would it be safe, if you were a Villa fan, I mean, from the club's perspective, is an anonymous sort of 12, 13, 14 season where you get a lot of playing time for the kids, and then you sort of, you know, live to fight another day next year without the Heskies and Friedels, and, well, you're stuck with Richard Dunn because of the giant contract Martin O'Neill gave him. But would that be such a bad thing going forward?
Well, I don't know. I'm sort of interested in the Richard Dunn situation, actually. I mean, I know he's got a gigantic contract, but 12 months ago, or, you know, maybe a bit before, he was outstanding, and I've always thought he's a great defender. I don't know. It seems to be a bit of a failure of management that he seems to have just been discarded by Julien, so that makes me a little bit sort of, if I was a Villa fan, I might be a little bit nervous about that. That would be acceptable if that's what you're guaranteed, but you're not, of course. And at the moment, they do look in trouble.
Right, moving on to our debate. Every year around this time of year, you know, people love their lists and the endless debates, and the issue of where Messi and Ronaldo rank with the all-time greats come up. And I was thinking about this, and I actually wrote about it in the paper today about sort of measuring greatness. And I watched Dead Poets Society again, which is always on this time of year. And if you remember, there's a scene where Robin Williams gets very angry in the introduction because he's got this poetry book which says that, oh, you can plot on a graph the greatness of a poem in terms of importance and perfection, and, you know, the greater the area, that you can establish it that way. And it kind of strikes me that there really are no objective, or there are very few anyway, objective parameters for greatness, and that you know, it's a given. People always say, like, oh, well, you can't compare players from different eras, and it seems like an easy cliche, but it is kind of true, right, Paddy?
Yes, I mean, I always think of Shankly Paisley on that. Shankly, in my opinion, was undoubtedly a great manager. Paisley wasn't. And yet, if you add up the trophies, Paisley was and Shankly wasn't. So greatness is in the eye of the beholder. And I think we're lucky in that we can... I think there's so much greatness in the game today. We are living greatness. Ronaldo is undoubtedly a great player by any standards. Messi is undoubtedly a great player by any standards. Xavi is undoubtedly a great player by any standards. And I can't remember the last time when the battle for the player of the year was more of an open contest. I mean, I think the game, from that point of view, is very, very healthy.
Football's interpretive. You can't quantify it. You know, all this attempt to statisticise football is just ludicrous. And so in many ways, it's the perfect, you know, that is the perfect analogy, poetry.
Yeah.
I think the difficulty in... I've been thinking about it. I don't think there's that much difficulty in comparing players of different eras in the effect, while the physical side of the game's changed, and while, you know, sort of the tactics and, you know, nutrition and all that sort of thing, I think you can look at the effect a player has on his team and on his teammates and how he deals with the opposition. I mean, I think it's quite easy, and I think only a fool would, you know, sort of look at the history of football and not say that Maradona and Pele head and shoulders above everyone.
Correct.
I mean, after that, the arguments start. But I mean, Maradona, for example, it always seems fairly simple to me. Take any other player in the history of the game, put him in Argentina team in 1986. Do Argentina win the World Cup?
No.
So, you know, it's...
But here, I guess what you're saying is that you can contextualize the impact an individual has on a team. But, you know, and I'm going to throw this to George. In absolute terms, I mean, I had this discussion with our producer, our excellent producer, Ped, who's filling in for the lot less talented Chris Skinner. The idea that, I mean, if you were to take West Ham today, this West Ham team we saw play against Fulham, George, and transport them back through history and have him play the 1968 Manchester United European Cup winners, would it be absurd to suggest that West Ham would probably win simply because their players are bigger, stronger, faster, fitter?
I don't think it would be absurd. No, I mean, and if you look at all sort of fields of human endeavour, the sort of improvements have been, you know, extraordinary over the last sort of 20, 30, 40 years. I don't, you know, if the West Ham team of today, however, was playing on a quagmire of a pitch, you know, using a very heavy leather ball, how much would that change things? So, yeah, I mean, everything has to have a context. I think if you take a player from 30, 40 years ago and line them up alongside somebody now, you're going to have it would be very, very difficult. But then, you know, put them back in conditions that were played in back then, you know, that would sort of even the playing field a bit. It's so difficult. It's so difficult to know what would happen.
Hey, Paddy, I know this was before your time, but it was closer to your time, I think, than any of our times.
Yes.
I went and online and I found all the YouTube footage of Stanley Matthews that I could possibly find. And, you know, I grew up with, like most people, well, not growing up here, but, you know, you grew up with the legend of Stanley Matthews and, you know, whatever else. And I saw him and I saw him dribble. And in all the footage I saw a guy standing still, receiving the ball, dancing over the ball, and then either putting it across or laying it off to somebody.
Yeah.
I never once saw him beat a man and accelerate away.
Yeah.
Now, it might just be the limited footage that we have, but is the legend of Stanley Matthews compared to, you know, maybe even some of his contemporaries, is that modulated by the fact that he did it in a big game and he played on until he was 100 years old and he was better spoken and he did those adverts for cigarettes or whatever it was?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think if you showed if Matthews came into the game today, people would say, yeah, he's got a chance, but he lacks a trick. And of course, I mean, I can remember when you played in the playground and in the streets, and you beat a man, people would say, "Who do you think you are, Stanley Matthews?" And I mean, he was a byword for trickery at that time. Of course, the game's improved a lot, and Matthews is a perfect example to take. Another would be Alfredo Di Stefano, who at some even older timers than me would argue about Pele, the Pele Maradona. I wouldn't, but they would put him in. If you ever take the trouble, and I would recommend it, to watch the 1960 Champions League final between Real Madrid and Eintracht, watch it, and you will see some of the worst football You know, the football that simply you would be laughed at for playing in the Blue Square Betting League or whatever it's called.
I think it comes down to, I mean, there's loads of factors. I mean, I tend to judge people's football knowledge by, you know, who's the best player ever. You know, it's, I mean, yeah. You know, in the environment, as I say, there are people who say Di Stefano, you're older, but generally the people that come up and say, will say Maradona. If they say Maradona, I go, yeah. Generally know what they're
talking
about. If they say Pelé, you say, well, give them benefit of the doubt, but they're close enough. If they say George Best, a laugh so loud, because he wasn't even the best player for Manchester United.
He wasn't the most popular.
He was the most talented.
The most popular was talented. Dennis Law.
But I think Charlton and Law were better. He was the most talented, but talent also doesn't add up to making a great player.
No, it doesn't.
Duncan McKenzie could ball juggle and jump over minis, but he wasn't a great player. But he had more talent than probably most players have ever seen. So, you know, it's I think, to me, and we come back to sort of what I was saying to George earlier on, yeah, it's great watching players who are talented and do wacky things on the pitch, like try to dribble the ball out of defence. But what I want to see in a football player, I want to see a football player who is part of a team, is an organic part of the team, and who improves all the people around him. And Maradona was the master of that.
There are some players, though, who for sheer talent would have to qualify as great, and George Best would be one of them. But he wasn't nowhere near as effective or good a player as Diego Maradona, who had all as much talent as Best, but much more intelligence on the field.
I want to throw up another player from that team there. George, one of the things that really struck me looking from the outside growing up is most countries in the world, because we all have our local myths and archetypes, I agree with Tony. You ask who's the greatest player ever, who are the top three. In every country you go to, Pelé and Maradona are in the top three. Mm-hmm. And then number three changes based on where you are. If you're in Spain, they'll say Di Stefano. Mm-hmm. If you're in Holland, they might say Cruyff. In Germany, yeah. Beckenbauer. In England, they'll usually say Best. And in Scotland, they might say Dennis Law. Although Tony might say they probably should say Dalglish. But
in Scotland, Baxter
or Baxter, yeah.
Mm.
Well, here's the thing. So we all have our local legends and archetypes. What I found interesting was growing up, I'd read about Bobby Charlton, who I hadn't seen play, and I think to myself, okay, so this guy won a million caps. He was the all-time goal scorer for England before Cheat broke the record, before Lineker broke the record. And, you know, he won as much as the other people. He had a lot more longevity. Was there a sense that maybe Bobby Charlton wasn't given the same consideration as Best because his personal story is nowhere near as compelling, and, you know, because he went prematurely bald and because he's sort of been around with his glasses forever, and so we kind of take him for granted.
The one thing you can say that Best had was a massive impact on the culture of the country. Bobby Charlton didn't, you know, he was like, Bobby Charlton was straight, normal, buttoned up. Best was, you know, was a symbol of the 60s. Now, who was better on the football pitch didn't kind of matter because, you know, if you're a symbol of a cultural symbol, you get crap airports named after you, but, and, you know, and if you're not, you don't.
Oddly, Charlton was much more worldwide. Charlton was much better known than George Best, but George Best was more sexy for us because we saw him. But the world was unaware because George Best was from Northern Ireland. The world remained unaware of him, and yet Bobby Charlton was, you know, you talk about, you know, his bald head. He became even more distinctive worldwide because of that.
Going back to a broader point. And I'll try to ask a shorter question this time. What's your take on what Tony said, that sort of the iconography of the player, in the sense that Pelé, for a certain generation, you know, had an impact that went beyond football. I mean, he stopped the war, he was on TV and so on, and Maradona equally
Viagra.
So. He did the Viagra ads late in his career, but if you had the misfortune of not being on television, not being born in a country that went to the World Cup, do your achievements pale?
Well, I think they have to, don't they? It's not. I mean, the same could apply to Ryan Giggs, who was the most, you know, decorated player in English football, but we never saw him in a World Cup, so weren't able to judge him against sort of the best, the very, very best players in the world. I mean, I think that has to be a fact, because just as this conversation we're having now, greats versus greats in different eras, is a leap of faith. So we have to say, oh well, you know, Giggs could have done this, Best could have done that, and we don't know because we don't have the evidence. And, you know, frankly, even if Northern Ireland had sort of got to the World Cups when Best played, or the same applied to Giggs, they wouldn't have got very far in them. So, you know, it's probably no coincidence that when we're talking about Maradona and Pelé, yes, they were absolutely iconic, the most fundamental players in their teams, but they were also playing in pretty damn good teams in the first place. So, you know, they're World Cup winners, and that's something that we're never going to be able to say about that ilk of player.
Alfredo Di Stefano never kicked a ball in a World Cup.
But he did play for three different countries, so you know he was on his way. But
he never played in a World Cup, and his achievements were all at club level. Yeah.
Time now for everyone's favorite part of the show: it's quick hits. Manchester United defeat Sunderland 2-0, but Wayne Rooney's goalless streak from open play now extends to 1,324 minutes. Paddy, he has a ways to go before he equals Gary Birtles, but given that he's playing well, is it a legitimate worry for Manchester United?
No, not at all. As you say, he's playing well. He's hitting the post. He's going to score.
Given Steve Bruce's record against Sir Alex and the fact that there were six first-teamers missing, expectations weren't particularly high ahead of Sunderland's trip to Old Trafford. But surely they could have done better. George, why is this team so freaking inconsistent?
Well, I'm not sure if I accept the premise of that question. They're unbeaten at home. They've lost four away from home, but four defeats this season is the same as Man City. It's the same as Chelsea. It's less than Arsenal. They're a very, very young team. For much of this season, they've been the youngest team in the Premier League, and I think a few growing pains are to be expected. They didn't do very well at Old Trafford, but I think that had as much to do with missing personnel and Steve Bruce's tactics.
George, thank you for setting me straight. In the battle of the Premier League's up-and-coming managers, Owen Coyle bested Roberto Di Matteo as Bolton won 2-0. Johan Elmander set up the first and scored the second, and then paid tribute to Avi Cohen, who was recovering in hospital after a car accident. Tony, what do you remember of Avi Cohen, and are you as mystified as I am as to the link between the Swedish big man and the Israeli former Liverpool fullback?
No, because Avi's son plays with Elmander, doesn't he? So, you know, so that's clearly the link. But Avi Cohen, what do I remember most about him? The own goals. Avi was great. Yeah, he scored own goals, scored against seven, went up the other end and scored one. He was a good fullback who wasn't quite good enough to play in the best side in the world, and he was a breath of fresh air and fun to watch.
Avi Cohen's other contribution, of course, was the fact that without him, Pini Zahavi might never have become a force in world football.
Ah, yes.
Steve Keane will be at charge at Blackburn until the end of the season. Paddy, as you pointed out recently, he has a cosmopolitan background, having played in Portugal and coached in Spain. But on Sunday, Rovers suffered a home loss to Stoke, and a number of players, most notably skipper Christopher Samba, seem to want to leave. Your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts, unfortunately, are that dear old Steve will be parting company with Blackburn when they bring in a new manager. It was clearly their intention when they jettisoned Big Sam, the new leadership. I think Steve Keane will be gone in weeks.
Wolves lose a relegation six-pointer to Wigan, and Mick McCarthy was up to his gallows humour in commenting on the penalty appeal that was turned down. George, you saw McCarthy up close and personal at Sunderland. Any reason to believe he can keep Wolves up?
It's my backside and the bacon slicer, you know, Gab, as Mick would no doubt say. Yes, I love him to bit. He did very, very well at Sunderland on a shoestring budget. I fear for them this time. They've conceded more than 30 goals. They have got problems in defence, but it looks pretty unsustainable at the moment, and they've got some tough games coming up too.
Yeah, Wolves not very lucky this season. Only once in the history of the Barclays Premier League, and we know there was no football before the Barclays Premier League, has a team been bottom of the Barclays Premier League table at Christmas and avoided relegation from the Barclays Premier League into oblivion, because of course that's what's outside the Barclays Premier League. Nothingness, oblivion. But West Ham beat Fulham 3-1 in the Barclays Premier League and are no longer bottom of the Barclays Premier League. Tony, I know how much you love the Barclays Premier League. Was it just an awful game between awful teams, or can West Ham stay in the Barclays Premier League? The preceding question was brought to you courtesy of Barclays Bank.
You know, when you look at these Barclays Premier League sides that played yesterday at Craven Cottage, you've got to say that they were absolutely rubbish. Both sides were pretty poor. The reasonable players, badly organised. The scattergun approach that characterises the tactics and the style of the Barclays Premier League today. And I think both of them could well go down. You know what, though? The Barclays Premier League will live on without them.
Gab, one for you. Inter have picked Leonardo to replace Rafa Benitez as manager. Right choice? And is it true that Rafa leaves Inter having earned some £50,000 a day?
Yeah, when you calculate his wages and his payoff, yeah, he's on about 350 grand a week, which is even more than one Jose Mourinho, I might add. I think Leonardo is actually the right replacement, given the circumstances at Inter. They have to rebuild on the cheap, while at the same time having one last go at it with this team. You know, they made a loss of £130 million in their last financial year, and in the age of financial fair play, you just can't have that. And Leonardo's hungry, and he's bright, and he's handsome, and he speaks five languages, and what could be better? We'll be back next week with another episode of The Game. In the meantime, you can go to www.thetimes.co.uk. You'll find all your news, your gossip, your analysis, and also our web chats. Mine's on Mondays, Paddy's is on Tuesdays, and Ollie K's is on Wednesdays. Also, don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter. I'm on there at Marcotti. Paddy's on there at P. Barkley Times. George is on there at Culkin The Times. And of course, Ollie K's on there too, but I believe he's on holiday this week, so we won't mention him. We'll be back next Monday for our first show of 2011 as the games keep coming. Thanks so much for your time. Have a great new year, and we'll catch you next year. Till then, ta-ta.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.